Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hi there. I'm Rand Abdelfattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, actor Rainn Wilson is best known for his role as the annoying, overbearing paper salesman Dwight Schrute on the NBC sitcom The Office. But his best-selling book, Soul Boom, is spiritual and soulful. And in its opening pages, Wilson acknowledges the disconnect. He writes, "Why is the beet-farming, paper-selling, tangentially Amish man-baby with the giant forehead and short-sleeved mustard shirts writing about the meaning of life?" This hour, we'll find out the answer and how it's connected to being part of one of TV's biggest sitcoms. Did The Office or another sitcom teach you something about life's big truths? Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The NBC series The Office aired for 9 seasons until 2013, and now more than a decade later, it's drawn new fans among members of Gen Z. YouTube clips of the show get millions of views. Fans rewatch it wearing Dunder Mifflin Paper Company t-shirts. And one of the show's most memorable characters is Dwight Schrute, the overbearing, mansplaining, nerd paper salesman obsessed with Bears, Beats, and Battlestar Galactica.
Hello. I don't believe we've been introduced. Dwight Schrute, assistant regional manager.
Actor Rainn Wilson played Dwight Schrute and understands the staying power of certain sitcoms, how their characters can weave themselves into our lives and begin to feel like family. And in his case, they can even inform our spiritual development. Wilson's book, Soul Boom, Why We Need a Spiritual Revolution, is now out in paperback. Rainn, welcome to Forum.
Thanks for having me on Forum, Mina.
Really glad to have you. I'd like to know what you think has given The Office its staying power for so long.
Well, you know, my theory about television is that successful shows are about dysfunctional families that never figure things out. And there's a parallel in our lives because we all have a dysfunctional family that never figures stuff out, right? It just, because there's no life lessons learned in The Office. I guess you could kind of say in the final season, you know, maybe there's some maturity in characters you hadn't previously seen. So there was, we were able to kind of resolve the show. But time and time again, Michael Scott and Dwight Schrute never learn to be more sensitive or self-aware. And we just keep coming back to that. Also, I'll say that our showrunner, Greg Daniels, who really is the mastermind behind our show, he always said, like, just keep it 85-90% funny and just have that 5-10% of heartfelt, and that will kind of keep people coming back. And a lot of shows won't do that. They won't give you the 5-10% of the reality of the characters, but I think that that grounds the characters in a way that keeps audiences connected with their hearts.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of articles, people doing think pieces about The Office and its impact have actually said more than it's just a dysfunctional family. They've said things about how, I think this was Vanity Fair, where they were saying that it depicts a cast of characters trying to build their lives despite the obvious crappiness of the world. One where God has to be found in a Chili's because Chili's is as good as it gets. So, and it's also about sort of being on the precipice of the world shifting. So the world doesn't need paper anymore, but Dunder Mifflin is trying to sell it. That reflection was actually in a piece that was talking about how Gen Z specifically is obsessed with The Office. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on why Gen Z might connect to this sort of message.
Yeah, it's, you know, from the get-go, The Office was really popular with high school and college kids. Mm. And that was staggering to us. That absolutely kerfuffled us. I mean, it didn't make any sense. This is a show about a dysfunctional boss and working in an office. We thought, oh, people in their 30s, people in their 40s that worked in offices and could relate. But then you had 16-year-olds from the get-go who were just like relating to it and understanding it and connecting to it in a way that people like in their 40s who had worked in offices just didn't really get it early on. So not only did Gen Z connect, from the get-go, teenagers and college kids have loved the show. I have no idea why. Actually, I have a little bit of an idea why. I think that, and in fact, a lot of them I hear from, and they'll be like, someday I want to work in an office just like Dunder Mifflin. It's like, oh, no, you don't. You don't want to be in a soul-sucking cubicle. Trust me. But you know, what curiously happened, and it even happened before COVID, was, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with Jonathan Haidt and his new book, The Anxious Generation, and the mental health epidemic that really kind of launched around the same time as The Office. You know, it really started up in 2008, 9, 10. And The Office became the kind of antidote to a chaotic, troubling world. And for so many people, they watch the show over and over again because it brings them kind of solace and meaning. It soothes anxiety. It gives them hope. It makes them laugh. And I've heard that, I can't tell you how many thousands of times I've heard that The Office has a deep, profound meaning to people that watch it over and over again. They wake up in the morning and watch it. They go to bed watching it. And it became a balm for an epidemic of mental health issues.
Hmm. Well, in Soul Boom, you credit sitcoms as being a bomb to some extent. As a kid in the 70s, it was reflecting your life. Yes, you talk about dysfunctional families that were in some of them, but it was even teaching you big truths, teaching you things about spirituality. You talk about Kung Fu and Star Trek. I'll admit I've never seen Kung Fu. So tell me about it and what that taught you.
Well, yes. Yeah. So television, I was kind of raised by television in the 70s. I think a lot of us were at the time. Sitcoms in the 70s, the classic ones, Bob Newhart, Taxi, MASH. I mean, we watched them every night. That meant a great deal to me personally because I really responded to those secondary comedic characters in those shows. And and I really even just personally was like, I want to do that. Which is crazy that I ended up doing exactly that thing. So I have a personal soft spot for the inspiration that those sitcoms specifically gave me. But then in Soul Boom, early on, I'm kind of like setting the scene, you know, so I define some terms like what spirituality is. That's a tough word to define. And I as a way in for a lot of people that might be turned off by terms like spirituality or faith or, you know, anything like that, I talk about these television shows, Kung Fu and Star Trek, as reflections of what spirituality can be or might be. So Kung Fu is, you've got to watch it, although it is slow. It's like watching paint dry. It's so slow.
But yeah, I struggled to watch shows called like Kung Fu in the 70s just because, you know, I don't know how racist they're going to be.
It's pretty it's pretty racist in some bad ways, and it also addresses racism in some really good ways. And by the way, the whole show idea was stolen from Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee came up with the idea and wanted to play Kwai Chang Kane, a Chinese Shaolin monk coming to the Old West looking for his brother and wanting to kind of like find his way in the world and having to battle kind of racist cowboys. Because a lot of the conflict is about racism itself, you know, that he's having to fight. But the main point of Kung Fu is that there's this Shaolin monk who's got all of this beautiful Eastern wisdom. He's always seeking peace. He's just looking for his brother, wandering through an aggressive, difficult land filled with racist cowboys. He's got to kick their butts every once in a while, which is pretty awesome. And I liken this to the spiritual journey of all of us, that we are going in the world, we are carrying some wisdom with us, we're seeking peace, we're seeking understanding, we're on our own quest, and we're using spiritual tools to navigate a really difficult world. So that's part one. Star Trek, I also liken to the spiritual experience, and that's a spiritual path that people don't talk about as much. It's not as popular when you think about and talk about spirituality. But in Star Trek, it's actually a very spiritual show because humanity has overcome its issues. Humanity has overcome racism. It's overcome income inequality. It's overcome all of the issues that brought it down. It's come out of the ashes of World War III. And humanity is then allowed to achieve its highest expression. And in Gene Roddenberry's case, this is a technological one of exploring strange new worlds and seeking out new life and joining kind of intergalactic civilizations. But we're allowed to do that because we've overcome the issues that have plagued our species from the beginning. So I am saying that spirituality has two different expressions. We have the personal expression that's internal on our path that we individually walk. And collectively, there's also a spiritual path that humanity needs to walk more. Hence, the spiritual revolution of the title.
We're talking with actor Rainn Wilson, who played Dwight Schrute on The Office and most recently wrote the best-selling book Soul Boom, Why We Need a Spiritual Revolution. And you, our listeners, are invited to join the conversation. What do you want to ask or tell Rainn Wilson? Maybe you want to tell him about what Dwight Schrute, the character, the secondary comedic character of The Office, meant to you.
Hey, secondary? Really? Really? Okay.
Or what Rainn Wilson is sharing about faith resonating with you. Did The Office or another sitcom teach you something about life's big truths? You can email forum@kqed.org or find us on our social channels at KQED Forum on X, Instagram, our digital community on Discord, or call us now at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Deeply sorry. Wow. When you were saying that you fell in love with secondary characters on sitcoms and how who
That's
knew
right.
you'd be playing them, I was just sort of quoting you back to you.
I teed you up. I'm proudly the secondary character of The Office, and I carry that torch proudly.
And you also connect The Office, well, basically the character, to the question of why would this person, this Dwight-like character, or the person who played this Dwight character, be basically writing a book on spirituality. And so what is the answer? And we have a minute going to the break, so we can continue the answer after that if it's longer. But because there are a lot of reasons, but give us a couple as we go into the break. Why did somebody who played a character like Dwight Schrute want to write a book about spirituality?
Well, I can do a nice teaser to lead us up to the break. How's
Great.
That?
Great.
Yeah, because I almost died, and I needed to write this book because I was suffering in anguish. More after the break.
Oh, my God.
How
that is
that?
An incredible teaser. Okay, listeners, I know you will definitely not leave now. We're hearing a little bit of Billie Eilish because our Gen Z producer, Caroline, loved the way you quizzed Billie Eilish a few years ago on her love of The Office.
Yes, yes. She's the biggest Office fan of all. Love it.
We'll have more with Rainn Wilson. And if you're a big Office fan, call in 866-733-6786. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Right? My symptoms are my pain, but you are my strange addiction. Did you like it? Did you like that?
Which part?
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Michael!
Oh, God! Dwight, come on!
Wanted to talk to you about the downsizing.
There's no downsizing.
But if there were, I'd be protected as assistant regional manager.
Assistant to the regional manager, Dwight.
Yeah.
That's my guest this hour. Rainn Wilson as Dwight Schrute and Steve Carell playing his boss Michael in the hit sitcom The Office. Wilson has studied world religion, spiritual beliefs, and is calling for a spiritual revolution in his new book Soul Boom, which is also a podcast. You, our listeners, are joining the conversation at 866-733-6786 with your questions for Rainn about The Office, about spirituality, about religion, and I'm sure you are also wanting to hear why he wrote this book about spirituality. And Rainn, you really set this up with a huge statement, which is that you almost died. What were you referring to?
I was referring to some really, really dark times that I went through in my 20s, especially. I talk about early on in the book, I have a chapter called A Plethora of Pandemics. So I wrote the book during COVID and really was pondering much more deeply the fact that there are a number of pandemics that are affecting humanity right now, not just COVID. Racism, we've spoken about, income inequality, sexism, materialism, kind of militaristic nationalism, climate change one could look at as a pandemic, and the mental health epidemic that we referenced in terms of The Office. And what I realized was that in my 20s, I was going through a mental health crisis of my own. In the 90s, when I was experiencing it, there wasn't really a lingo or a vocabulary for mental health issues. There weren't podcasts and, you know, YouTube channels and apps to help deal with mental health issues. We just kind of like went through it. And I was very depressed and dealt with a lot of anxiety. I would have crippling anxiety attacks, panic attacks. I dealt with addiction. I dealt with loneliness and alienation. These came and went and cycled through my 20s and early 30s in some really dark ways. And I did the only thing I knew to do to find my way out. Because I had grown up a member of the Baha'i faith, and that played such an important role in my childhood and youth, and although I had left the Baha'i faith and jettisoned anything having to do with spirituality and religion as an adult trying to be an actor in New York City, I went back to spirituality as a path to find my way out of a mental health crisis. So, because I didn't know what else to do. You know, Julia Cameron, the author of The Artist's Way, she has a quote I love that says, "I come to spirituality not out of virtue, but out of necessity." So I needed the tools that I found in studying Buddhism and the Bhagavad Gita and in reading the Bible and the Quran and many other spiritual texts, including texts of the Baha'i faith, to get me out of some really dark times and help me find meaning. So when I say I almost died, like, you know, was I suicidal with a gun in my mouth? No. Did I really deeply think many, many times, why should I be alive? Why should I stay alive? Which, by the way, I think is a really important question for people to ask. You don't need to be suicidal to be asking that question. That's one of the ones I dive into in Soul Boom.
Yeah. Wow. Let me go to caller Pam in Oakland. Pam, thanks for joining us. You're on.
Thanks, Nina. Thanks, Rain. This is a really wonderful conversation. Rain, something that you just said really resonated with me about the spirituality and coming to that out of necessity. I feel that way a lot, and I think that in the Bay Area, sometimes we have some aversion to spirituality and religion for some of the reasons that, you know, they've been used against folks, but I think they're a really powerful tool for us to, you know, reach higher purposes. But my original comment was also something resonated with you when you talked about Star Trek. I also have a huge belief around that, you know, there's so many things that are wonderful about that kind of Star Trek, the Next Generation universe, where we've solved all these issues and we're out exploring the galaxy. Hmm. And when things are happening around, you know, the world today, we see just so much pain and suffering. And I often have this thought that I repeat to my husband, I say, we're never going to get to Star Trek at this rate. You know, we're going to end up in Star Wars. And I feel like that kind of, that juxtaposition of, like, do we want to be Star Wars or do we want to be Star Trek? And I think if you look at the two realities, everyone wants to be Star Trek. Everyone wants to have the income inequality, no more racism, you know, acceptance of cultures and different ways of life. And so that just really resonated with me, and I really appreciated
Pam,
you sharing.
I'm going to interrupt. Pam, I'm totally stealing that. I'm totally stealing that. Do we want Star Trek or Star Wars, which is all about the political machinations and the evil empire and authoritarian states and
exactly.
battles? And that's so smart. Thank you. Pam,
thanks,
Pam, Pam,
Pam.
The well-named, the perfectly named Pam. Pam, Pam.
I know, exactly. Your old friend from the office. Thank you so much. And please, thank you for sharing this. And I hope you continue to share it and share your thoughts with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pam. Rain, why did you jettison spirituality? Why did you leave the Baha'i faith?
I, like so many people in their 20s and like so many people in the Bay Area, all I saw was the pain, trauma, and hypocrisy of religion, just in toto, not necessarily the Baha'i faith, although I did see plenty of hypocrisy in the Baha'i faith. And I wanted to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. You know, I was 20 years old. I moved to New York City in the late 80s. And I wanted to be an actor, and I wanted to be a bohemian, and I wanted to do what I wanted, and I didn't want to think about morality. I didn't want to think about the soul or God or faith or meaning. Blech. I just wanted to, it's not like I wanted to just rage and party, but I didn't want any of that hanging over my head. I wanted to just study and go make art. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. That's a path a lot of people take in their 20s, and it worked until it didn't, and it worked until in my mid-20s, I was disconsolate and filled with agony and slowly trickled back onto what I would call a more spiritual path, which has brought my... It's not like it saved my life immediately and made everything instantly better. It's not like some panacea, but the journey has been an interesting and fulfilling one, and I enjoy the richness of my life now.
Well, Ben writes, I just wanted to say that similarly as a kid growing up in the 70s, I was looking for some meaning in sitcoms. As a latchkey kid, I looked for the similarities and the differences between my life and those on the screen as a way to try and learn and develop. Not sure how great a teacher Gilligan's Island was, but Starsky and Hutch seemed pretty legit. Yeah, you give a lot of gratitude to sitcoms. You also feel gratitude, I've heard you say, when you hear the song Mystery Dance by Elvis Costello. Mm. So what is the story behind that?
Yeah, that's the song that changed my life. And I got to tell Elvis that this last year.
No way.
Yeah. Amazing, amazing. I moved to a new high school out of suburban Seattle, and I was this pimply, geeky, nerdy kid who was a bassoon player and on the chess team. And I went to this school that had a really great drama program, and I'd always kind of secretly wanted to do acting. And I signed up for this acting class, and the exercise was called Private in Public. And you, just how you would act in your room, you act out in front of the class. So I brought in my record player and my Elvis Costello albums. This was 1983. And I played Mystery Dance and just thrashed around and acted like a total doofus. And it brought down the house. And I was a brand new kid at the school, and all of a sudden, all these attractive young high school women that I had not even met yet came up and were like, oh, my God, you're so funny. That was so great. Oh, my gosh. And And I lit up like a Christmas tree. And in my head, I was like, screw the bassoon. Screw the chess team. I'm done with that. I'm going to go full on drama nerd. This is what I want to do with the rest of my life. If I can get this kind of attention and make people laugh, and I seem to have that ability to do it, then that's it. I'm going. So thank you, Elvis Costello, for the song that changed my life.
Let me go to caller Nayana in Los Gatos. Nayana, you're on.
Oh, oh my God. I can't believe I got it. I'm such a fan of the show, of you, Rain, of everything that you do. My two cents, sorry, that's my child in the back. I'm not a Gen Z, but I love the show, and I've so much so that I've discussed in therapy. I also suffer a little bit, so sorry, for anxiety. Mm. And it's an actual strategy that we use, I mean, that I was taught to use, is to go back to music and shows that are somewhat soothing in a way, because they bring, you know, that memories like, okay, I know where I was when I started watching. It brings me that good feeling. And so it's something that I do. I watch during the day. I watched after my child was born. He was so tiny. I watched before going to sleep. And I think that that relation that people make with certain songs and a specific part of their lives and certain shows and where they were is just, it might be just, you know, such a cliche for some people, but it's something that really can soothe a person. Yeah. And just bring you back all that, you know, that good feeling. Okay, I know. I'm so safe when I was watching that. So it just brings all that back. And it just, it's so great. I've still watch it. And I mean, I can't believe I went on the radio. I was talking to you. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, I was even said to when they answer my phone, I was like, I'm not a Gen Z. Okay, just sign me up that.
All right.
A lot of fans.
I think it's just, it crosses a millennial. And
here's to us Gen X old office fans.
Nayana, thank you.
Thank you for the call. And I do want to just, if I can jump in, I have a few things to say. I think that my therapist, Bruce, talks about anxiety a lot. And that anxiety can be a helper. That anxiety is kind of throwing up a flare. And what it is saying to us is, hey, what do you need? And that is an important step to take, I think, that you feel anxiety. Okay, what's going on? I feel dysregulated. I feel fearful. I feel discombobulated, out of balance. Then the next question is, okay, so what do I need? And a lot of people stop at anxiety and just stay in the anxiety. And so what the caller was saying, I'm sorry, I forget her name. The caller was saying is really like, I feel anxiety, and what I need is something to soothe me. And that's great. Self-soothing is really important. It can be through music, it can be through shows, but then it can be more than that. It can be a hot bath. It can be exercise. It can be meditation. It can be a hug. It can be calling a friend. It can be connecting with someone. And we train our kind of anxiety muscles. I have an anxiety disorder. I know of what I speak. This is something I've suffered with for decades. And when I feel anxiety, I go to that next thing, you know, what do I need? And that can be more carefully cultivated and calibrated as you get a little more nuanced with it, and can actually help your life. That anxiety can be like, okay, I need to meditate, I need to spend some time on myself, or I need to go out and help someone else. It can be a guide for living in the world. How do you turn anxiety into something positive?
Do you connect the art of acting to spirituality, to the way that Nayana was describing how it helped her? Made me think about that.
Yeah, it's something I struggled with for a long time, Mina. I was like, even early on, I started this company called Soul Pancake. And it was a digital media company and YouTube channel. And we were making a lot of stuff about spirituality. And it was just an interest of mine. I was always reading books and, you know, meditating and learning about it. And here I was on The Office, and there seemed to be a disconnect. Like, wait, I'm in a polyester suit, you know, falling down a set of stairs, and I'm listening to Eckhart Tolle. Like, what's going on? And it really illumined during that period of my life the idea that it's all the same. It's all one. It's the human search for transcendence. We are searching connection and meaning and hope and for something outside our mere physical reality, something more than pooping and eating and having sex and seeking social status, that that transcendence can be found in art just as it can be found in spirituality. Art is an expression of the divine impulse just as spirituality is. And even, yes, playing Dwight is art in a way. It's entertainment. It's transforming into a character. It's making people laugh. There's an artistry in that. So I view the artistic journey, and this is also a very Baha'i concept, that the artistic expression is the same as prayer.
Let me go to Rob next. Rob in San Francisco, you're on with Rainn Wilson.
Thank you. Thank you. Great opportunity to talk to Dwight. You were always my favorite secondary character, as you say. I don't even know where to start. I loved the show. I loved how it was like a first-person comedy, but it was deadpan. It was kind of a different kind of a concept from what I was used to. And my son and I watched it when he was in middle school, and it was a great opportunity for us to bond over that, kind of like my dad and I watched MASH when I was growing up. And was always wondering, did you like playing Dwight? Because he was such the character that everybody loved to hate, but it was, and I loved your interactions with Michael. That was just some great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if the question is, did I love playing Dwight? It was incredible. It was the greatest 9 or 10 years of my life. I mean, the writers are incredible. Every episode, there would be something really fun and unique. I begged them to always be writing me physical comedy. I love doing physical comedy. I studied clowning in college, like literally like studied with like teachers from France that taught clown. And it kind of teed up perfectly my nerdy, weird, dysfunctional clown self and this great character. And I got to be a part of a great show.
You've been really candid, though, Rainn, about how you were mostly unhappy during your time in the office. And you say because it wasn't enough. There was something that wasn't enough in your life. What wasn't enough?
Yeah, I mean, let me correct you a little bit. I wasn't mostly unhappy. Some headlines said that, That's not what I said. What I said is, like, there were times in the office when I was grossly unhappy. And this is an incredible spiritual conundrum. Maybe you even feel it a little bit at KQED.
Maybe.
Oh, no. Which is this kind of human never enoughness that we often feel. So here I am on this show. I'm making gobs of money. People love the show. We're winning awards. It's opening the door. I'm doing movies and doing other projects. I'm getting to do really cool things. It's beyond my wildest imagination for a pimply suburban kid from Seattle. And it wasn't enough. Like, why am I not getting that film? And why am I not getting that development deal? And why am I not getting that commercial campaign? And why didn't I win the Emmy? Why did Jeremy Piven win the Emmy and not me? And the envy and comparison and just that. In the Buddhist tradition, it's called being a hungry ghost, right? It's living in the physical, and it's just aspiring to more physical, and it will never lead to happiness and fulfillment. And it was a struggle. And, you know, therapy helped a lot, and 12-step helped a lot. And, you know, pondering and reading faith wisdom helped me a great deal. And ultimately, I've really come out of that. I'm not completely immune, but I've talked about that a lot because people can really relate. You know, oftentimes we have a dream. Oh, I want to be an insurance salesman and have a house in the suburbs. And you get the house in the suburbs and you're a very successful insurance salesman. And you're like, it's not enough, because peace can't be found outside of ourselves. True fulfillment, true well-being has to be found inside.
We're talking about Rainn Wilson's journey with faith and one of TV's biggest comms. And we're talking about life's big questions with him. And we'll have more with Rainn Wilson and with you after the break. Stay with us. You are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
I'm not satisfied. tonight.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Can a guy just buy some bagels for his friends so they'll owe him a favor which he can use to get someone fired who stole a co-manager position from him anymore? Jeez. When did everyone get so cynical?
We're talking with Rainn Wilson, who played Dwight Schrute on the TV show The Office and has written a best-selling book now in paperback called Soul Boom, Why We Need a Spiritual Revolution, also a podcast, a YouTube channel. It talks about Rainn's journey with faith and with The Office and how he wrestled with some of life's biggest questions. What do you want to ask or tell Rainn Wilson? What do you want to say about what Dwight Schrute, the character of The Office, meant to you, or if it taught you something about life's big truths? What would you want a spiritual revolution to include or spread? 866-733-6786 is the number. The email address is forum@kqed.org. You can find us on our social channels at KQED Forum. We're on X, Instagram. Our digital community is Discord. One of the things that you say you began to wonder was, have we thrown the spiritual baby out with the religious bathwater? What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's one of the more unpopular themes of my book. and I'm speaking here to, you know, the height of godless Bay Area, California. I'm just kidding. But kind of. The Western world has rejected religion a lot of times for a very good reason. In fact, on the Soul Boom podcast next week, we have Dr. Thema Bryant, who is head of the American Psychological Association, brilliant, brilliant therapist, writer, philosopher. And she talks about how, to a lot of people, religion and faith is the most important and beautiful thing that's ever happened in their life. To a lot of people, religion and faith is the most traumatic and awful thing that's ever happened in their life. So it's a really difficult tightrope to walk to have that conversation. But in Blue State, California, and a lot of the Western world and in Europe, we've jettisoned religion a lot of times for a great reason. There's so much hypocrisy. It's caused great pain, great judgment, wars. There's wars right now being fought in the name of God. I think that, have we thrown the spiritual baby out with the religious bathwater? What have we lost in this mental health epidemic, in the way that society is going? What have we lost in the doing? Because religion does give us a lot of positives. And I have a chapter on, hey, kids, let's build a perfect religion. And I talk about the universals of religious faith, because a lot of times we just look at the bad and we look at the differences in religion, and a lot of people get really hung up on God. And so they say, I struggle with God, and so I don't want anything to do with organized religion. And it's often a traumatic response. It's often a knee-jerk traumatic response and not a deeply considered response. And what I bring up is that, let's just take one example, a community of people, diverse, seeking love, seeking service, seeking transcendence, seeking something greater as a group, there is something incredibly beautiful about that. Can that be found at a community center or a 12-step meeting or the Elks Lodge or, you know, a bridge club? Yeah, maybe. But this idea that this group of people is seeking some greater kind of service, is a very powerful force, and it has also been a very powerful force for good. So there's a lot more to it than that, but I'll leave it at that.
Well, Noel writes, I think that part of anxiety is thinking of the worst case scenarios, and this is a way of anticipating bad outcomes and how we deal with them. But then it can be so limiting, and we need to take a leap toward getting beyond thinking and into action. There's another statement that means a lot to you. We are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Why does that mean a lot to you?
Oh, that's a quote from Father Teilhard de Chardin, a Jesuit priest and philosopher. It's my favorite quote of all time. I said it to Oprah and she stole it. She started saying it all over the place. I didn't write it though, so I guess it's not really stealing. Anyway, to me, that perfectly frames the spiritual path. If we are spiritual beings having a human experience, you and I, Mina, everyone in that control booth, we get 70, 80, 90 years, 100 if we're lucky, in these fleshy suits. And the meat tuxedo falls away and we continue our spiritual journey. But our essence, our truth is immaterial, beyond material, connected to material. This, to me, perfectly frames the spiritual journey, because what is then the purpose of life? Well, it is to feed, nourish, understand, relish the spiritual being that's having a human experience. And we're all having that human experience. That can only build compassion for the suffering of others, for the differences of others. It unites us, all 7-8 billion of us on this planet, in knowing that we are all these spiritual shards of the divine.
You dedicated this book to your father, who died a few years ago. How did his death crystallize this for you?
Yeah, thank you. It was when I was young, my mom took off and I stayed with my dad. So he was when I was two. So he played a really seminal role in my life. He was the only kind of parental constant that I had. And so losing him right towards the beginning of COVID, he died of heart disease, was incredibly impactful. And I have a chapter called Death and How to Live It, because, Mina, I tackle the big issues here. I got God, I got death, I got faith, I got the meaning of life.
Yeah.
The list goes on and on. But when I saw his corpse, for lack of a better word, because that's what it was, and we were preparing it for burial, I had a profound experience of an understanding that this was an empty vessel. This was not my father. And so many people have corroborated this that I've spoken to over the years. He inhabited this vessel for 79 years, and his spirit, his consciousness, his personality, his heart, his laughter, his light had moved on, and the vessel remained behind. And that also just solidified this idea that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. He had a rough and wonderful 79 years of a human experience.
Yeah. Robert Wilson. Let me go to Tricia in San Francisco. Tricia, you're on.
Hi. Hi, Rain. I enjoy hearing you. I just wanted to check in about the idea of I deal with a lot of dysfunction in my life and those around me. And so it's, when my kids were in school, it was dyslexia. And then you go to the dysfunctional school and you think they're going to teach your kid how to read and they don't. And you go to the hospital and you think you're going to get, the care for all the issues. And they say, no, we're only going to go for this narrow issue. Everything else, come back and call your doctor if it's depression or dementia or whatever it is. You're going to have to deal with that separately. And so there's a, I don't know if that's, those are great examples, but the reading one is a good example. There's dysfunction, and we lead with our institutions and our relations with other people, expecting that they're going to be functional and inevitably being faced with breathtaking dysfunction and failure that's really traumatizing.
Yeah.
And so I guess I love talking about dysfunction because there's so much shame around it. and I want to hide somewhere because of the dysfunction, where it's everywhere. So how do we deal with it as omnipresent in our lives, in other people's lives, when everybody's covering up, putting on a facade, looking good, and there's just this terror along with the trauma of the failures of expectation and the harm done that comes out of these institutions?
Thanks.
Thank you. Such a great question. This is so in alignment with a lot of stuff I cover in Soul Boom because, oh, how much time do I have? I think you hit the nail on the head of what a lot of people are feeling. And one of the theses that I have in the book, maybe my central one, is that current systems, which is what you're describing like the healthcare system and like the educational system, current systems are built along the very worst aspects of humanity because they've been built along kind of capitalist, consumerist, foundations. And that has to do with every man for himself, profit at all costs, backstabbing. It's a dog-eat-dog world, kind of toxic individualism. And our systems are built on those kind of foundations. So one of the, theses of Soul Boom is like, what would it be like to reinvent systems along spiritual lines? What would it be like if we had healthcare and education, just to name two? I mean, you could go on and on. You could say agriculture, political systems that were based on mutuality, consultation, community, compassion, and, the best possible outcomes where, service and altruism and giving are at the center of everything that we do. So the problem with contemporary society, as I see it, is we keep slapping Band-Aids on systems that are cancerous. And as long, legislation is important and, we can have London Breed or Gavin Newsom or Joe Biden or Congress change some things and change some laws. And we should keep doing that. But we're not having a larger conversation about why is our healthcare system based in profit the way that it is. It is not serving our populace. What would it be like to have a healthcare system that was based in healing and based in care? That might sound like hippy-dippy and, you might roll your eyes and be like, oh, that's preposterous. We've got to pay the doctors somehow. But our priorities are so skewed and we just need to be having a conversation about kind of spiritual universals that might be the pillars for propping up, how our systems work.
Listener Sarah Toby writes, the wonderful Rainn Wilson has touched on something truly intrepid, the art and practice of clowning. I've been a clown my whole life, and I've lived to tell that it's a kind of spirituality in and of itself, one that celebrates the idea of one big soul and the concept that love is the last great technology, allowing for the sharing of emotions, stories, and innocence. Being a clown keeps you hooked to your most childlike, primordial self, and I revel in it. It saves me and so many others. What a lovely reflection, Sarah. And let me remind listeners, you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. And you do talk about love when you talk about what your own religion would include and includes, something that you envision for others to be part of as well. Let me go to Lucinda and Capitola. Lucinda, join us.
Hey, good morning. I am wondering how you deal with your ego when you get rejected or overlooked as an artist, as a man. And, I'm an artist, and I know it's all about the ego, but I can't help but feel upset when something happens. It's like an injustice. So I'd love to hear how you deal with it.
What a great question. So profound. Thank you, Lucinda. Yeah, the ego is one of the central questions of every faith tradition. And even the oldest writings in the humanity, the Vedas and Upanishads from India that are the foundational to the Hindu faith and tradition. And there's so many things to break down about the ego. I deal with it. I just got yesterday got the news that I didn't get this lead role in a big film that I was up for, because I'm not a, you know, I'm not a big enough name. And it hurts, it stings. And I guess there's a couple of, you know, the Vedic response to the ego is that, you know, it is both an illusion, and it's there to defend us and protect us. So the first thing that needs to happen is I need to acknowledge that rejection and how it makes me feel. Like, oh, that feels bad. I really wanted to play that role. Does this tweak my self-esteem? How does it make me feel? And then in the acknowledgement, I get to release it, because it is an illusion. And the ego is there to protect us. The ego throughout history, human history, is there, and anxiety. We're there to, like, you know, do I have enough? Am I being respected enough? It's establishing the individual and the self. And the spiritual practice is to understand that we're all not only connected, we're all one. We are all waves in the ocean. Does a wave have an individual identity? Kind of, it does, but it's also part of the greater whole. So there's in every tradition, the Catholic mystic tradition deals with it. This idea of, you know, wrestling with what in the Baha'i faith is called the insistent self, which is really what Baha'is think of as Satan. The insistent self that's always, what about me? That what about me voice is legitimate, and it needs to be acknowledged, embraced, and dealt with.
Steve writes, regarding catastrophizing, I am certainly prone to this. A key lesson for me is that the reason to notice the possible bad outcomes is to take action guarding against them. If you don't act, your careful notice of the potential problem is just pointless monkey brain chattering. You talk about the importance also of fighting cynicism, Rain. Why is cynicism such an important one to fight?
Well, I tell a story in the back of the book, and it's a very profound and important story to me. I got to study with one of the great acting teachers of all time and directors, Andre Gregory, the subject of the film My Dinner with Andre, and I had a meeting with him. He would meet with his acting students, and he said, so, Rain, how are you doing? And I was like, well, Andre, I'm really bitter. I'm kind of cynical, and I'm kind of, you know, the world is so dark and messed up. I don't know if it's ever going to change. And he reached out and grabbed my arm hard, and he looked in my eyes, and he said, don't do it. You can't be cynical. You can't be pessimistic. If you're cynical, they win. If you're pessimistic, they win, because you'll sit on your couch and you won't do anything. You've got to keep hope alive. You've got to instill joy and believe and hope and believe that things can change. And he was literally like, now get out of here. And he, like, kind of threw me out of his apartment. And I stumbled out on the street, and truly, truly that conversation changed the course of my life at that point. And I really realized, oh, I don't have time. The humanity doesn't have time to sit in any kind of pessimism and cynicism. Nothing will get done if we succumb to those forces. And they're strong, and there's days I feel a lot of hopeless despair. But we all have a role to play. Again, this comes back to Kung Fu and Star Trek. We all have a role to play in our personal Kung Fu path journey. We all have a role to play in the transformation of humanity.
We all have a role to play. You've talked about how joy is our superpower. It's clear from our listeners' comments, I couldn't get to all of them, that you brought a lot of joy. Thanks so much for coming on, Rain. Really,
thanks,
appreciate
Mina.
It.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you, listeners. My thanks to Caroline Smith for producing today's segment. You've been listening to Forum. The book is Soul Boom, Why We Need a Spiritual Revolution. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.